Greetings, everyone. This is Koku from the Bitter Medicine Podcast, inviting you to tune in to the Bitter Medicine Podcast on KWAZ Radio.
Peace, family. This is Oni, inviting you to listen to the pro-black perspective, where black problems are addressed with black solutions.
Greetings, fam. Tune in to The Learning Curve with me, the revolutionary matron on KWAZ Radio.
Welcome to the 10th episode of our interview segment of the Harsh Reality Podcast. And in this segment, we look to bring on professionals, influential scholars, and any knowledgeable or interesting individuals to tell their own story. And also, we like to hear their unique takes on the news of the day. And personally, I think it's more beneficial and insightful for the listener to hear a person's perspective rather than the traditional question and answer format. So that's how we're going to rock today. Firstly, I got to shout out Melanated Conscious Society, MCS, headquartered in Jacksonville, Florida, is a mentorship organization teaching various life skills, self-sufficiency, and knowledge of self to our youth. Make sure y'all go follow them on Facebook and Instagram for the latest news, meetings, and valuable information. Shout out to Copper L, too. I talked to him last night. Brother doing his coaching thing, so he always working, man. And also shout out to the KWAZ Radio family, KWAZ, providing the latest and greatest in conscientious-oriented content. Make sure y'all follow them on all forms of social media, as well as subscribe to the Bitter Medicine Podcast, hosted by Koku, the pro-black perspective, hosted by Oni Tase. And also we got revolutionary matron in there. Welcome to the family with her podcast. So everybody's working out here. And lastly, the podcast is now on Patreon. Please donate. And of course, all proceeds go to upgrading the show and providing the best content we can for loyal listeners. And also for those looking to be featured on the show or looking to reach out, drop an email at theharshrealitypod@gmail.com. Now, without further ado, let's get to our esteemed guests. My guest today, making her second appearance on the series, is a beautiful vocal and unflinching Rhonda Marie. I keep saying Marie. It's Mary, excuse me.
It's all good.
She's an entrepreneur, a YouTuber, and a Second Amendment advocate. Pew, pew. Promoting firearm awareness, safety training, and self-defense, among other ventures. And I'm grateful and highly honored she is gracing us with her second appearance. First person to do that. So it's pretty dope. And also, her first appearance got the most views and downloads of this podcast so far. Woo. So shout out to you.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Congratulations.
Thank you. All right. Coming on here and dropping in science. I guess people was feeling it. I had only quoting some of your quotables. So that's pretty dope. So yeah, tell me what's been new since your first appearance. I think I seen you at the Solutionary Summit over there with Maj Ture kicking it. So what's been going on since your first appearance, I want to say?
Yes, I attended the Solutionary Summit that was down in Miami, I think going on about a month ago now. I was there with RZA Ism, Derek Grace, Larry Sharp, Angela Stanton. It was just a lot of people. You already said Maj Ture, Kwame Brown, Dr. Boyce Watkins. Those were just some of the names that were in the building, but it was a super amazing time, super informative, really, really, really good energy, like all throughout, to see, you know, that amount of people come together and support. What I really like this year, love this year, actually, about the Solutionary Summit is not only did we have businesses coming from across the country to be sponsors, but also a lot of businesses, a few businesses right there from the local Miami area that showed up to make their presence known, connect with the audience, and sell products. So I thought that was a really dope thing, and to let some of those, you know, even those black businesses with, you know, kind of getting their feet in the water and growing, kind of letting them access people that are already like solutionary minded, That was a really good time. So overall, I really, really enjoyed it. This was my second time returning, and hopefully I'll be looking forward again to next year.
That's definitely dope. And I even like the way they worded it, a way that it's geared toward, you know, solutions. I think a lot of people have fallen in love with complaining. I think people have even made a career out of complaining.
They have absolutely
zero desire to have actually things fixed or have solutions to their problems, because then that would mean an income stream stops. You know what I'm saying? So that's big up to that. And sounds like it was a crazy time when I think I seen the yacht. I think y'all pulled up the yacht.
Yes. That Sunday we were on a yacht. We had some actual training, both safety, medic, a little bit of safety and medic, and a little bit of firearms training on a yacht. So I doubt you've seen that one before. So that was pretty cool. You know, we got a chance to learn, and then we got a little turn up time too. So yeah, that was a good way to cap off the event.
Yeah, that's dope. Work hard, play hard.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then I seen the little smoke. I seen a little smoke. I had to jump in for half a second too. I see you recently had that ad campaign. I guess some people got a hold of it and tried to say, you know, some disparaging things in regards to some of the movements you was making and stuff. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to me. You know, once again, we're preaching that solutionary mindset, right?
Right, absolutely.
So you gotta be weary of the trolls out here. Like I said, do not want to see people progress. Actually, don't want to see people make moves. Don't even want to see you collaborate with people who are trying to help you make the moves. And it's funny because a lot of these same people preach, you know, being uplifted, preach reparations, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yet that whole concept revolves around having to get something from somebody, work with somebody else, right? Yet they don't want, you know, you to, you know, work with others to achieve something that actually would be beneficial for everybody in that space. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Correct. As far as that, the ad campaign that you saw was I went to D.C. with a group of women called the D.C. Project. I was invited there to speak to representatives on the behalf of my community about gun rights. While I was there, I made a video at the Lincoln Memorial. And some people didn't like that. Some people didn't like that. I worked with this group that could seem like it could be in opposition to my message. But one thing about it, regardless of the ladies, regardless of their past, their demographic, their careers, one thing that we all have in common is we all have Second Amendment stories. And the thing about me and the difference between myself and these trolls is that I'm the same person in every room. I don't care what room I walk into. I'm not afraid to talk to anybody. I've spoke at events, and none of these trolls have a story about a white person walking up to them after the event and telling them right in their face how much they and their family despise Malcolm X, and then having to stand 10 toes down in a room politely and classy and still say exactly what the heck I would say in any other room or setting. So one thing about me, I don't care who's in that room. I'm not cowering. I don't code switch. Okay. Like these, these college kids, they think they so about it. And then you know what I mean? Like these people mm-hmm. still like, okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to go in on your show. You got people online. These people still ask their white boss for permission to go to the bathroom, and then got the nerve to try to come at me about anything that I'm doing. Every single person that I work with is voluntary. I don't have to work with anybody I don't want to, nor am I scared to work with anybody, nor walk in any room. So that's just how that is. And if it's something that I want to do, I'm going to do it. If it's something that I don't want to do, I'm not going to do it. And it's just that simple. And some of these same trolls that'll be in my freaking inbox have not bought anything, have not supported anything, have not reached out to the people where they will, since they know so much, okay, where they would like to see me at. They haven't said, hey, you know, this, you know, Rhonda Mary, look at what she's doing. I think you should fly her out. I think you should have her on your platform. I think you should help her get her message out. They haven't done that. So, you know what I mean? I just literally, when you mentioned it earlier, I was like, man, I had totally forgot about that, because I pay these people dust. They do nothing, but they say the most. So, you know, I just keep working. Like, that's what I'm doing. The message is expanding. We're reaching women, particularly we're reaching more Black women. And that's what the message is really about, expanding Second Amendment advocacy, expanding freedom principles, and letting people know that it's okay to not be a part of the go along to get along gang. I got that from Kwame Brown, of course. So shout out to him, but you know.
And they going out too. I seen today Stephen A is talking all crazy about Kyrie and all these other places. So that's
part surprised by
it. Yeah. Kwame hit it on the head.
I ain't surprised by that.
Hey, yo, they gassed up. They sent out their Autobots. They transform and they ready to go. But you hit a big fact, too, is like, don't even pay these internet. Half these people I just block. You know what I mean? These internet trolls. You get three messages if you seem like you sincere, and then I block you. That's the way I roll. And what you do realize, too, I've had two encounters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I you know, somebody came to me like super disrespectful type of deal. Mm-hmm. One was actually like a so-called, you know, a white leftist liberal guy, you know, dropped the C word on me, dropped the coon.
What? Man, they cry. Like, we didn't let these folks get way too out of hand. Get way too out of hand.
Yeah, what's the part, the compassionate side, right? The only one to ever do that, right?
Man.
And then another time I had somebody I actually knew in real life talk crazy on the internet. I ran into him in real life and he profusely apologized. Talk about how he had a bad day that day. He didn't mean any of that. And, yeah, okay, it's cool, man. I know when 220-pound Black man in front of you is a little different. But
right.
So we need to like not pay these people no mind. Once again, we stay focused. And I like what you said on that. You know what I mean? Like, you're working. You're going into rooms where you might not even be liked. You know, you might not, your message might not be well received, but you're willing to walk into those rooms. You're willing to work with those people, right? Meanwhile, these people stay in their echo chamber, and it's crazy to me how they got smoke. But your biggest accomplishment is Twitter, you know, like,
right, exactly.
102 followers talking crazy about somebody.
Exactly.
So moving on, we gave them enough attention.
Shout out to the trolls for the fiery introduction.
Thank you for firing us up. We might can continue that to the rest of the pod. I know you hit on earlier too. Moving on, we got the George Floyd bill. We seen that die in Congress. I seen you make some remarks in regards to it. I kind of just want you to expand on that, hint on, you know, why you thought that died the way it did, why it was kind of like no reaction, you didn't hear much, and what problems you kind of saw with that bill.
So I believe that the bill died because nobody's holding them accountable. Nobody gives a crap. Like, let's just keep it real. And if they did, it wouldn't be so dead silent right now. You had people all across the globe last year in the streets under the direction and the permission of white liberals. And as soon as big tech isn't feeding the algorithms anymore, nobody cares. And so that's usually just how it works. And Black people being the number one viewership of entertainment and social media, we just go to and fro. We go with the trends, whatever trending, whatever the heck the Shade Room is talking about. I don't know, people probably doing the Omarion dance challenge at this point. You know what I mean? So that's just really what it comes down to. And I think it's problematic. I think it's problematic when you don't have people that, you know, do all this talk about systemic racism and, you know, how bad America is. And then it's that easy to be just moseyed on into the next topic and so easily forget. And at this point, it's becoming to me more and more obvious that we are in a lot of ways being used. Not only did we go out and vote in record numbers for the author of the crime bill, the same year that we protested police brutality, not only did we do that, we did it gleefully. We danced in the streets. You had freaking Roland Martin crying. You had freaking Van Lathan, okay, on a Crying Negro Network, right? Shedding tears. Like, let's get it together. And now, just silence. It's embarrassing. It's sickening. It's disgusting. I saw a clip from Louis Farrakhan today where he talked about how so many of these so-called leaders are intentionally leading our people astray. Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, what's funny is it seems race is not trendy this administration, right?
And it's the funny thing about it. We were pre-warned. Like, we were literally already warned. You had the founders of Black Lives Matter already saying not too long after that, after the election, you know what, that black trauma thing, that was cool while we did it, but we don't think we want to, you know, next year we'll focus a little bit more on black boy and black girl joy, you know what I'm saying? Like they've told us, you know what I mean? So, like, if we're not going to listen, who am I to say? Maybe they like this. Maybe they're addicted to the cycle of abuse. Maybe they like the Stockholm syndrome. Maybe, I mean, you know.
I think some of these people are addicted to victimhood and victim mentality. And I hate to say that, but it's the truth, yo. I just think some people love it. Once again, we hear before that you have grifters who wouldn't even be able to grift if they couldn't take advantage of people wanting to be a victim.
Absolutely. I saw somebody tweet something today. He said, do people want solutions or you want a pity party? And that just, you know, like, that tweet alone was just undeniable, because a lot of these conversations are so repetitive. And not only that, they're being prompted by things outside of ourselves. And that should not be the case. It should start and end with us. Not the black community being used as attack dogs and political pawns.
And I don't even think a lot of these people have experienced half the stuff. It's funny how the silver spoon section is the most vocal when it comes to this, you know. And what one thing I will say, you hit on some early, is that a lot of times they foreshadow what they do. I had so many people hit me up this past year, like, yo, you predicted this. You predicted that. You predicted this. They thinking I'm Miss Cleo around here, you know, free reading, you know. But in reality, if you just pay attention, they tell you exactly what they're going to do. You know what I'm saying? They tell you big fact. They tell you what they're going to do before they even do it. If you just pay attention and use that thing called critical thinking that we used to have it in abundance, you know, and you will know exactly what's coming down the pipe, particularly with, you know, what we're going to hit on a little bit later with the jab mandates. Like, all of this was said like in 2020, something, you know what I'm saying? But if you don't pay attention, you know, you end up going thinking you defeated the Third Reich by voting for the guy who said, you know, you ain't black if you don't vote for me, right? You an electric slide. That was so embarrassing. That is so embarrassing. And it's funny because a lot of these people are so quiet now, yo. Man, quiet as church mice, yo. You don't see no supportive post. I don't hear nobody talking about it in public. They are silent. You know, I think some of them even embarrassed to a point. It's just like, I'm not saying.
They should be embarrassed. I think the more embarrassing part is you have so many people bragging bragging about doing it. That was the worst part. You should just cash your vote and shut up. Like, I mean, that's the least you could have done. But the receipts are there. And a lot of these clowns gonna have to, you know, you already have, I think, Brie Newsome. Is that Brie Newsome or I get her confused sometimes with the other lady. What's the other one that be the Cadillac commercial? Is that her name? It's gonna come to me in a second.
Yeah, I can't think of.
But she's already trying to do little content, trying to halfway backpedal. We didn't vote for you because of this. We didn't tell people to vote for you because of this, because you were going to be treating Haitians like this at the border. I mean, like, this, like, let the record show, like, the history of Joe Biden. As it relates to Black people, this was a person that called Barack Obama like the first clean Negro or something like that. I don't even remember.
Right. This Negro right here can really talk.
This one, the good ones right here. You know what I mean? So, and don't get me wrong, like, Trump had his BS with him. You know, I was very critical of some of the things that Trump did, particularly with his spending, particularly with his comments as it relates to guns and things like that. But Biden is in our pockets, man. And people really thinking it's tax the rich. Yeah, we're gonna see. Now you about to have this administration checking into the accounts of people with over $600. Mm-hmm. All right, so your local weed man may be bagging groceries soon. All right, then, you know what I'm saying? And then you possibly looking at a mileage tax, like we looking at inflation. You both Republicans and Democrats, if they don't agree on anything else, it's going to be big war, right? So you just had the House pass this huge defense bill, 37 million more than Joe Biden even asked for. And then just the following week, they come out with a story talking about the United States is running out of money. Mm. Like, whose money do you think that is?
They are handing it out like Halloween candy. It's very fitting is this time of the year. And people don't even realize that the economy, the one thing that you could say was good. Now, I don't care how you felt about the orange, dude. Everybody was eating from 2016 to 2020.
Man, right? Man, what?
Now, everything they do has been an attack on the middle class, if you know the show. Everything. If you look at, because we skipping around, but whatever, we're going to let it flow. If you look at the stuff they're doing, right, it is affecting the middle class the most. Your energy is up 15% right now. Your gas up like 13%, right? And now you got mandates for, you know, the nurses of the world, right? The corporate people of the world, mm-hmm. the state workers, the city workers.
Exactly. Exactly.
The Silicon Valley dudes ain't getting no mandates, right?
Exactly.
And also the Walmart workers ain't really getting no mandates because they don't care because they ain't making like $13 an hour.
Right? It might be coming. I don't think so
because I know people that work in fast food. They not going to touch them. You know why? Because they don't care. They'll quit. They quit anyway. So what?
That's a good point.
So it's like, it's almost, it doesn't pay to be in the middle, yo. Mm. The middle is like where you're screwed. That's where you got your mortgage, you got your car payment, you got your two kids and your wife and your dog. So you need that paycheck, right? Mm. When you super poor, you don't care. I done walked off many. I quit many jobs. Every summer when I was poor, I quit jobs because I could kick it the summertime. Did not care, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you rich, you don't care because I just go to Sweden and live in a mansion and have, you know, my groceries delivered and, you know, right. What I mean? So those are the best places you can honestly be. When you're in the middle, you are controlled, yo. You are so controlled by that paycheck. Most people don't even have, what was it, $500 in the bank for emergency? So you are so screwed by that paycheck. And then they increasing everything, increasing groceries. Groceries up 25%, energy up 15%. You're screwed, right? Now you are a wage slave for real. And now they can tell you to do anything. You know what I'm saying? And it's imagine if the orange dude did half of this stuff that this cat doing.
Man, Man, they'll have all hell breaking loose right now. If especially with this George Floyd thing, if that had happened, we talking about a blue Congress and a blue presidency. It's all blue. It's all blue. So this is proof that that blue, no matter who thing, is flawed. Somebody's lying here. Like, so what's the real truth? And if that had happened under the Trump administration, it would be all kind of living in America and everything else. You know what I mean? There'll be, I'm talking about every single day, they'll be talking about in the cartoons telling your kids how racist this administration is. Like, the least we could do, the minimum is to have objectivity and an actual standard. That's the least we can do.
Word. Big facts. And like you said, when things happen on this admin, it has to do with the George Floyd bill, it had to do with racism. It's very quiet, right?
Right.
It's very quiet. You don't hear nothing about it. Once that bill died, you didn't hear nothing about it. Well, my homie L. Miguel on the previous podcast we hit on, he's like, it might have been the name of the bill, yo. He's like, people don't like to hear the name, you know what I'm saying? Particularly on a certain side, they don't want to hear that name, right?
I do want to be clear. I don't think that the bill was a little light, and I think the bill had its problems with it. So I definitely want to make that clear. But for the levels of pandering we saw last year, the levels of pandering, you have to remember you had Nancy Pelosi and the squad kneeling in the kente cloth. You had Elizabeth Warren making speeches with BLM blocks behind her. You had people painting whole towns and NBA side court lines yellow with the Black Lives Matter. You had people making George Floyd jewelry necklaces and plush toy pillows. Okay, for the levels of pandering that we saw, for this to be hushed away and just moved out of the eye of the public so silently, it does not add up. It does not add up.
Well, you know what? I knew that thing was dead in the water when I seen that quantified immunity the end of that. I said, that thing's dead. If you know anything about police unions, for one.
Yeah.
That thing is dead on arrival. And honestly, who the hell would want to take that job? I'm not taking that job. They got a pretty opens around here, 46K to be a county sheriff. And now I have no quantified immunity. So anything.
No qualified immunity.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Anything I do. Correct. Anything I do, I can be liable for a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Personal. You know what I'm saying? I'm not taking that job for anything less than six figures. If you're not throwing six figures at me, and even then, I might not take that gig. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just
I could see it. I could see it. I do think I could see both arguments. With the qualified immunity, I feel like that would prompt. I would hope it will prompt officers to actually train more and be willing to be held accountable. You know what I mean? Like, because right now I think they have to qualify like once a year or something like that. I don't want to state it incorrectly.
It depends on the force you with, you know, some more than others, but most of the time, and they go once a year, basic training, and basically like a firearm test, no basic shooting, nothing like you would expect somebody who's, particularly if you're like in a high crime area, like a Chicago, like a New York, something like that, is the training is very lacking. So I agree with that part.
You know, so I would hope it would be like, all right, you know, these are some tweaks we're going to make. We're going to offer this better training so you actually feel secure. You know what I mean? In the steps that you're taking. And also, I mean, okay, you know, police officers may have more dangerous interactions. But a civilian, we're going to be held to high levels of scrutiny if we try to protect our lives. So mm-hmm. what's the difference? Mm-hmm. I feel like you have to be held accountable. You have to be held accountable. And I will say as a citizen who has been learning more, who has been training more, one really good component why I do think that people should have some basic level of firearms training beyond some of the things I already talk about, but it helps you understand from a different perspective what's a good shoot, what's a bad shoot, different ways a jury could look at this. Was this imminent danger? How did this change moment to moment? Like, it broadens your perspective and your understanding of conflict, right? Right. And when not to use that firearm. And so I do think that if you had more civilians that had an understanding of that, I think that some of these situations wouldn't even, honestly, they wouldn't get the airtime. They wouldn't get as much airtime. Mm. As they do now. And I'm not saying the George Floyd situation is part of that, but there's been other ones. You know, one most notably was the Micaiah Bryant situation. Super duper duper unfortunate. I absolutely never want to see anybody you know, lose their life like that, because, you know, when you haven't gotten a grasp on your emotions, it can put you in a really bad situation, and it can do it really quickly. And one thing that training provides, and why this is so important for Black women, a key component when you have a good trainer is de-escalation, right? Because you never, I don't care who it is, right? Whether the police never showed up, anytime you get in an altercation, you have to keep in the forefront that it can escalate up to death. Anytime, any single time there's an altercation, you have to ask yourself, is this worth losing my life over? I don't care if that's civilian to civilian, right? And so the first component of that is de-escalation, learning when to walk away, learning what's not worth it, learning when somebody is an actual imminent a threat or a danger to you. So that's number one, right? Number two is when that officer comes on that scene and he literally hears somebody say, I'm going to stab you, or I believe it was, I'm going to stab you. It may have possibly, I don't want to say it incorrectly, but it was either I'm going to stab you or I'm going to kill you. It was one or the other. When you have an officer coming on the scene, hearing somebody saying that and also going into that motion, these people that haven't trained and watch all these Westerns and these cowboys and these alien movies and the Wakanda movies and all this, you shoulda, coulda, woulda, this is how you shoulda movies. Of course, you're going to try to rationalize, because it hurts all of us to see that. Even me, you know what I mean? I never want to see that. And that's why talking about these principles, the safety mechanism, the de-escalation, the conflict resolution, this is a message that saves lives. It goes way, 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 way beyond firearms, right? And hopefully we can get it to a point, I would love to see, where there were men there. We need stand-up men in our community that are going to correct some of this BS. You know what I mean? They're going to be able to stand up when you had these younger hothead males and their feelings and their emotions and their ego. When you had these women, we need our men, our patriarchal figures that can help in this conflict resolution. And we need them to stand up. So we ain't even got to call the police there in the first place.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the level that's the level of thinking that we have to get to. We cannot continue to say, oh, the police are racist. Oh, the police are the KKK. Oh, the police are white supremacists. Oh, the police want to kill us. And then not even be able to control our own communities, much less our own freaking families.
Big facts, yo.
And then we call some random white man in to help with the problem that we couldn't solve in our own freaking family, and then want to get mad because he solved it the way he was taught to solve it. Yeah. Which you had already said was racist. So why did you call him there in the first place?
Exactly.
These are the levels of conversation that we have to have. We have to talk about these things holistically. We gotta stop talking out both sides of our mouth. We have to stop doing that. If you believe these people are so racist, this goes back to the beginning of our conversation. Where is your freaking solution? So here is mine. Here is a solution that I'm offering and hopefully expanding this conversation for the community. We have to learn to hopefully handle some things these cells so we can take some of the burden off that system in the first place. That is an immediate solution that we can start working on right now, regardless of whatever bill has died in Congress.
Yeah, big facts. I think it's very telling that almost in a military war zone, you have more rights than American citizens, right? You hit on that young lady with the knife. It was males. I think her father, didn't her father bring her out there?
I don't know if he brought her out there, but
I know he was out there. He was there. And instead of, you know, de-escalating situations like you used to do,
daddy fighting with him.
Yeah, you participating in the nonsense. And now your little girl gone, you know, and that's
Over what?
Facebook beef or something.
It was not worth her life, man. I'm seeing people now, like I'm seeing videos floating of people just like over freaking parking spaces or like dudes like, you want to try? Come try. You want to, it's whatever. And then a dude will just shoot him. And I'm like, man, go home to your family. The video that I'm most recently talking about in particular, it was a couple sitting in a car, right? The dude gets out of the car to address some guy that we can't see. He's off camera. And he's like, if you're going to do it then, or come check me or something, he was saying. And it had to be over something completely minuscule. His woman is sitting there recording. Recording is hyping it up.
Yep.
Because you should have been
saying,
now you
got an audience. Yep.
You should have been saying, you want to go Facebook Live to show your peeps how down your man is, how strong your man is. You know what I'm saying? Y'all Bunny and Clyde, baby boy. You know what I mean? Instead of, you should have been like, baby, like, it's not worth it. Let's get out of here. Let's go home. Let's go in the store and just get out. It's not worth it. Like, it's like, who is that dude? Nobody. It does not matter. But he died right there in front of his lady because of his ego, man. I'm talking about dude empty, like the whole like magazine in him.
Yep. De-escalation. That's one of the things too, when you hit on earlier. Where are the men? I know you just spoke on the woman of the situation. The masculinity is so low, so ego driven right now, is that dudes is just dying and itching to go world star and sucker punch somebody or show how macho. And we ain't talking young kids. You know, I expect that from teenagers. I seen 40-year-olds scrapping on, you know, it's what are you doing at this point? And then the first thing people want to do, you got 10 people around, 20 people around that could break that joint up, right? Especially if it's over nothing. You know, cadet it, you know, say something. Instead, they whipping out their phones. They trying to get their video uploaded. I don't know if you get paid for uploading the videos, if somebody want that video, but it's almost like they getting paid cameramen. Like, yo, showing people's dying moments instead of helping, you know. Learn some CPR. I've had people I know personally that have passed because instead of helping, people want to stand around. People want to record. People want to talk. Nobody knows how to put pressure, how to stop, you know, stop the bleeding, how to apply a tourniquet. None of that, right? They just want to sit around and record. So now your whole family got to see that moment too for forever. Right. You know, it's ridiculous. And it talks to the lack in pretty much outlawing of masculinity. Now they got put toxic in it. I guarantee you, if you Google the word masculinity right now, toxic will pop up in 5 of the articles that on that first Google search page.
I could believe. And people think, I think this is somewhat unique to the Black American experience, is that I think that particularly, not just the women, I think in general, we kind of have a very skewed concept of masculinity. And I do think that that's been something that's been done and programmed into our people over time. But even our view of masculinity, even believing that masculinity is toxic and has anything to do with ego, is a falsehood, right?
Right.
Masculinity is supposed to be like an anchor, a leader, a protector, a provider, strong. And strong doesn't mean rude. Strong doesn't mean a jerk. Strong doesn't mean an a-hole, right? A leader doesn't mean inconsiderate, right? A good man is one of great character. And so it has nothing to do with ego. It's not ego driven. And I do think, unfortunately, with a lot of our women either not seeing, strong or true masculinity in their homes, they mistake it for toxic masculinity. And then they want to ascribe toxic masculinity to all men. And that's just not the case. That's just not the case. So that woman sitting in that passenger seat recording her man acting like that may think that that's protection. Ooh, my man is acting strong, when really your man is acting a little bit inconsiderate because he's taking your safety. Mm-hmm. He's taking your safety for granted. And now it's become all about ego. That's not strong. Being strong is being a thinker, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking 4, 5, sometimes 6 steps ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's why chess was a big thing, right? That's that, mm-hmm. that logic, that strategy, that strategic,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
Go home to your family at the end of the day. So everything is not worth you proving something, you know. Go home to your family, raise your kids, man. These are things that are masculine, you know, being a protector, provider, and also knowing when to say, yo, we finna get out this situation.
Right.
We finna go to the crib. Come on, babe. We finna go. You know what I'm saying? And we kind of lost that. And I don't even like to even say toxic masculine. I think putting that together is ridiculous. It's like evil benevolence, right? It's two things that is an oxymoron. So I don't even like to even, but for the sake of this conversation, I'm just going to hit on the word that they like to use, which is link something that's good in its concept and link it with something that's bad, toxicity. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of relates to the next thing, which is, you know, the thoughts on, you know, the jab mandates. We kind of hit on it earlier, right? But it's a reason, you know, why the U.S. doesn't look like Australia, Canada, right? Which is much worse in terms of what they got going on. So what I want to hear your thoughts. What do you think is the reason why the U.S. hasn't gone full dystopia camp?
Because of our guns.
Ding, ding, with the Jeopardy.
I mean, that's literally the answer. Even if you look now at the places that are implementing the strictest mandates, they also have the strictest gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something to be considered. You don't see them coming down here messing with them country boys with the big trucks yet. They're not touching Texas, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama. You don't see the same things going on because they know what's up. And as somebody that's been traveling, I travel a pretty good bit this year, but I actually traveled the most last year in the middle of the pandemic all across the country. And literally, depending on where you are, it's like two different worlds. Mm-hmm. Going from Florida to DC, it's almost like two different universes. It's miles apart. When you go to Florida, it's just sunny and beautiful. Everybody's living life and soaking up sun and having a good time, you know, and happy and smiling. And when you go to DC, it's like it's something in the air. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, hordes of sheep. Everybody just seems like sad, depressed, and you know, everybody's masked. They barely want to speak to you. Scared to walk on the same side of the street as you. You know, it's just a lot. It's completely, man. It's like, and sometimes I'm so used to still being so like free. That when I go other places, I just kind of be like, wow, like, oh, for real? Y'all still on that for real? Oh, that's a thing? Oh, y'all still doing that double mask thing? Oh, for real? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like I said, I died in Florida. I relocated at the perfect time. You know, I left 2015, I'm gonna say, and just happened. I don't know what it was, but it was something that said, get out of the Chicago area right now, right? So packed up, moved in Florida, right? And then this year has been telling, it was like, yo, universe got me up out of there. But even here, you have people who are adhering. It's 95 degrees, humid. If you know anything about basic virology, epidemiology, you're outside in Florida at 95 degrees with 67% humidity, and you got your muzzle on. Do you think the air is poisonous? Nobody's even around you. You know what I mean? So it's very telling, because even down here, it's different patches. You know, if you go downtown as opposed to out in the outskirts of the city, it is like almost slightly different, like you said. And it's crazy too, because when you walk past them, you know, I'm the dirty unmasked dude, so they won't even make eye contact. It's like, don't look at him, he's so evil. Yeah. But I went to Vegas like you know, toward the beginning of this year before they dropped everything, right? And if you go like to even like the Chinatown area, it was like, where's your muzzle at? No, you got to ride. You know what I'm saying? But if you in the casinos, it's like, okay, whatever, you know?
Right, exactly. So
it's almost around this country is just so divided. But I think you hit the nail on the head, yo. Once again, the obvious reason, the reason why they not running down on us, that Second Amendment is so important. And we can see a lot of Commonwealth countries which have been disarmed forever. They don't even really have a Bill of Rights of any kind. Like their media they've been flat out lying since the 70s. Like there is no rules in the Commonwealth outside of what, you know, Parliament sets in your area, your prime minister, or ultimately they all Commonwealth nations. I explained to somebody earlier, like, you know, the Queen still has power. No, the Queen. No, I said, okay. It's a reason all of you guys' laws are similar, right? But I like what Eric July said, man. Like at this point, I think you have such divisiveness, such different ideologies that can't even. The example I like to bring up is the abortion rights, right? You have half this country that thinks that, you know, you're infringing, you're fascist upon a woman's body. You're telling her what to do. You're a misogynist, evil misogynist. Then the other half of this country that thinks those people are, you know, leftist liberal baby killers, you know, that it's like, how could you even compromise this issue? You know what I'm saying? How could you live in the same country? Half this country thinks that if you don't get the jab, you're evil, selfish, killing grandma. Another half think that you're a globalist, crazy, you know, communists. Like, how could you resolve these issues at this point? So I don't even see the Australia Canada thing. I see more of a breakup. You know what I'm saying? Whether I don't know how they're gonna break up, but it seems like that's kind of the way it's headed.
That would take more. The federal government, you really think they're gonna be like, oh, okay, cool. All right.
We don't want our salaries no more. We don't give up our power and just.
All right. Y'all want to be out? All right. We cool with that. I mean, I don't think it's completely impossible, but it would take a lot of restructuring. It would take a lot of restructuring. And it would change a lot as we know it. But I have been hearing quite a few people mentioning Succession, particularly with Texas, and it's one other place that may have already have some paperwork, like in the works. I'm not like 100% up on it, but I've been kind of seeing people mention it here and there. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But that is something that I've definitely hit on within this last year, is the fact that you're definitely going to see a bigger and bigger divide of people who want to be ruled and people who want to be left alone. And that divide is going to continue to deepen, particularly after this COVID thing. As you know, particularly with a lot of us kind of younger Black Americans, we're starting to realize that our families were tricked out of things like farming. We were tricked out of and pushed out of farming. We were tricked out of and pushed out of self-defense, the Second Amendment, and protecting ourselves and how that actually relates to and benefit us. We've believed for a long time that there's been a monopoly on having babies. You can only do that in their hospital systems. You can only educate your kids in their schools. And so you're going to really see, like, over these next couple of years, you're going to see a lot of more black people breaking away from the traditionalism. Well, it's actually modernism, actually. But you're gonna see people breaking more away from what we were told or what we were sold as the American dream. And we're gonna start doing things that actually add to our quality of life. So you're gonna see way more plant moms, you're gonna see more doulas, you're gonna see more midwives, you're gonna see more Black preppers and farmers. You're going to see a lot of people having their own businesses. They're going to skip the college route. They're going to skip all the college debt. You're going to see a lot more people going into gun ownership and preparing and training and like survival tactics and skills. So these are a lot of the things that you're going to see more and more Black people go into. Even homeschooling their children and starting to opt out of a lot of these systems. You're going to see more and more of that over these next few years.
I want to say homeschooling went from like 2% to almost like 13% this year, yes, or something along that lines.
I think it's right up like almost going up towards 15%. It's crazy. It's crazy. And I was trying to ring the alarm, like, you know, kind of even going into COVID, like this homeschool thing is going to be the wave. And, you know, some people will say, oh, well, it's the resources. Okay. We have it's so much opportunity now. It's so much. The thing is that for our lives to increase is going to take a little bit of sacrifice, because unfortunately, the government makes it super easy. Of course, they're going to make it super easy. Just wash the kids' face, throw a book pack on them and send them on, right? Of course, they're going to make it easy because they want to discourage you from taking on that personal responsibility. So, yes, it's going to be a little sacrifice. Sometimes people have concerns with these more alternative ways of life. First of all, with your midwives and your doulas, you have a lot of midwives and doulas, particularly Black ones, who are more cost effective. And also a lot of them are willing to work with you. A lot of them are willing to do payment plans. And then you also have some birthing centers now that take insurance. And then with these, the concept of homeschooling for families that it may be more expensive, for families that may have both parents working, or maybe one parent is working from home and the other is not, you can do these small co-ops, right? Where either one of the parents is the teacher, or you can rotate and make it beneficial and cost effective for everybody. Mm-hmm. It takes maybe, it depends on what's all included, right? But it probably takes a few hundred. If you're talking about an elementary student, it probably takes a few hundred dollars a year to effectively do a homeschooling program, which mostly is going to be your cost of like food and stuff like that. You're not going to need as much clothes. You're going to save money on gas and all the field trips and the uniforms and everything else that goes into school. But imagine, right, setting up a system where you and your girlfriends, or a couple of your neighbors and y'all kids, 3 to 5 kids, and y'all are rotating and pooling your resources to either pay a teacher, or, you know, the parents rotate the responsibility of teaching or outsourcing that to somebody in the community. So even directly hiring a teacher that may not want to take the jab, right? These are small solutions that could be very, very beneficial to our communities in more ways than one. Creating a job, saving somebody from a jab, and then also being more connected from your to your kids, and while moving them out of that system. That's like a crazy, like, quadruple whammy right there.
Or that's what they hit on, them learning pods. And that's why school choice legislation is so, which has been passing in record numbers across the country, where the money follows your kid instead of, you know, going to these state indoctrination centers, right?
Correct.
So if you get, like you said, 5-6 parents, even if y'all don't particularly want to teach the kids, if y'all can hire somebody, because now you have the school choice money, right? Six of y'all together, that's $120,000. That's a good payday for some teacher who doesn't want to get the jab, and now they out of work, right? So that's benefiting everybody, you know. And also, I think one of the biggest hurdles in terms of the education system is you're kind of locked in one little room all day, or one building.
Oh my God,
you're not really, you're not really. You may get a field trip once, you know, every once in a while, elementary school, and as you get in high school, that comes less and less, right? It's just too much of a logistics nightmare. But if you only have
about the school system, I don't want to say everything, but it's very much depressing, man. Mm-hmm. Walking and I'm saying this from being a product of public school and working in a public school for a little while, right? Walk in line, draw inside of the lines. Mm. You gotta only go to the bathroom X Pass. Amount of times. You can only drink water. Like, the kids not even drinking enough water throughout the day. Like, let's be completely real about this. In a lot of these classroom settings, you can't drink water out the you know, these kids are drinking water like once, maybe twice a day. I remember we used to have the kids lining up going to the water fountain, and it'd be like 1, 2, 3, all right, next person in line for the water fountain. And I'm like, bruh, like, I mean, even the lighting in the schools, the color, the
fluorescent
color
lights. Yeah.
Yes. The just a lot of these schools, they actually look like prisons on the outside, like in the inner cities, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at them, some of them, they're like these gray walls or these like cream color. It's just not inviting. It's not creative. It doesn't seem inspiring. When I was in school, I felt like I hated school. Turns out that I did not hate school. I hated the method of learning, and I hated what we were learning. But now, as an adult, I enjoy learning. Like, I love learning about new stuff that I'm actually interested in.
Mm-hmm. Half of high school you can throw away.
And I also remember this one time where this group of kids I had went to speak with the organization of kids, and, you know, it was just kind of answering questions. And one of the questions they had for me was, why wouldn't I just like be a teacher and just be a full-time teacher as a career? And I told them I couldn't do it. And at that time, even as I was giving the answer to them, I hadn't really evaluated myself to see why that was, but that's because I'm not the traditional person. Like, I look very much forward to homeschooling one day. I just, you know, that we got to be on this schedule. We got to do exactly this. This is what we have to learn today or else. And from this hour to this hour, I genuinely like freedom.
Mm-hmm. Those places are designed to resemble factories, which you would be like if you were working in a factory in 1940s. That's what the school system is designed. You got the bell, tells you go to lunch, walk in that single file line, you know, stand there. Don't speak up. Be quiet until you raise your hand and you're called upon. Right. It's almost torture for somebody who has a conscious thinking person, a conscious thinking kid, a kid that's a little bit more ahead, or even most kids in general. Like, you just need to be in fresh air. You hit on something with the water. I hadn't even thought about the water thing. It's like, you are, and as I sit here, you know, in cubicle hell or whatever I'm doing for a living, you know, you have your bottle of water right there, right? You can't do that in school, yo. That's crazy.
Think about now how worse it is with the whole mask mandates.
Oh my
God. They literally, some schools were telling kids, like, you can't even go to the cafeteria. If you go to the cafeteria, you can't talk at all in the cafeteria. What kind of life is that where you gotta be somewhere for 8 hours and at no point can you socialize? That is like who wants to do that?
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. And thing I said on too is traveling, yo. Traveling is probably the best education you can get. I don't care if it's local. Like I said, if you in Chicago and you get to go to a farm out in the outskirts of Chicago and see some cows and chickens, that's more educational than sitting in that fluorescent light building all day, right? Just being around different demographics, learning from other people, other people's lifestyles and stuff like that. Culture, getting soaking in other people's culture and things like that. These are things that are way more education, I would say, than sitting in those school to prison pipeline joints. That's all it is. You going to prison or you're going to a college, and then you're going to get to work in some little cubicle somewhere. And then you can be a manager and tell the other people in the cubicles what to do. And, you know, it's just a depressing scope of the future, right? That's why it's kind of a blessing that the chains are being broke. Like you said, 13% homeschool is going to increase. It's going to keep increasing as they keep shutting these schools down. They keep going to these virtual in and out, and then they talking about, oh, we're getting the jab, so the schools could. Y'all seen what happened at Harvard? You know, a place that's 90-something% jabbed. Oh, it was an outbreak. Everybody go home. You know, every time. So it's becoming less and less feasible to keep this same old standard of what we call education. And that's being broken. These ridiculous, and then send you to college so you can just rack up some loans.
Right.
And then have to work till you 40, 50 years old just to pay off the loans. And then maybe you can save. Maybe you can travel now, you know. Once you retire, now you can travel, you know, in your 60s.
And as we saw with COVID, you saw which jobs are actually essential. And a lot of those are your service jobs. Those are never going away. People are always going to get sick. People are always going to have babies. People's refrigerators and toilets are going to always be breaking.
Trades.
Going to always need these trucks going from one side of the country to the other, right? So some of these jobs that, you know, unfortunate as it was, and I almost think a scam in a lot of regards, calling so many people non-essential. But the good thing about that is hopefully it opened a lot of people's eyes to some of those directions that they can, I'm going to use the word push here, push their kids into. Push is probably not the best word, but I do think something we could do as a community is, especially with our generation, and I think in a lot of ways, you know, we weren't as prepared or didn't have a full understanding of what we were facing with, like, the job market and comparing it to, like, student loans and stuff like that. So hopefully putting our kids in a better position to, you know, well, this is the skilled labor that you could do and make just as much money as an electrician. You know what I mean? With I don't know if they do a year program or a 2-year degree. You could just make it just as much money, if not more money, with half the stress and half the college, you know, well, none of the college debt. You know,
and a tangible skill that you can use on the side.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Mechanics I know make bread on the side, carpenters, and you know, these people make money because they have a skill. They can always use that skill. It don't matter how much the S hits the fan, they can't take that skill away from you. That's gonna be valuable for forever, rather than your biggest skill is knowing how to put some numbers into a computer, right?
Right, absolutely.
And I think that's a good place to wrap it up. I ain't gonna keep you here too long. So if you got anything you want to plug, you know, go ahead. It's your time.
Just make sure that you guys follow me. I'm on Instagram, Rhonda_Mary. Twitter, I am Rhonda Mary. And YouTube, Rhonda Mary. So make sure you check out my YouTube. I do weekly videos over there, and check out my merch that's in the link descriptions in all of my bios. And yeah, I think that's it. Thank you for having me again.
I appreciate you. I'm trying to get you for a third time. I ain't done. You gonna but make sure when y'all look it up, it's Rhonda Mary, not Marie, like I always say. It just flows so much better, though. I think you should change.
Yeah, because y'all love trying to put the ethnic twang with the Marie. But to your credit, now a lot of the mamas of the last generations was definitely giving all their Black and Latina girls their Marie middle name. So I'll let you slide on that. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, I appreciate you showing up. So on behalf of everybody here at the Harsh Reality Podcast, I got to say peace.